Hello and welcome to What's Next in Social Sciences podcast. Thank you so much for tuning into our podcast episodes and for supporting us. This podcast aims to discuss career prospects and challenges for students and early career professionals in social sciences. I'm your host, Archana.
And I'm your co-host, Nirupama. In the last episode, we spoke with Smriti and Anahita, two core members of the community Women in Econ and Policy, about their group, the resources that they make available, and the need for such communities in this space. And they also shared some of their exciting plans for the future.
In this episode, we listen to some of the interesting insights they've gathered based on a survey they conducted, as well as through their experience working with some women in the space. They tell us what the most important skills are and share their advice for the recent graduates who may be finding it difficult to find their dream job during these tough times. Let's listen to them.
So I want to address a basic question, for those who are perhaps in their undergrad and don't have a clear idea about, what kind of jobs exist in the development sector. So let's talk about the kind of roles, the job titles that exist in the development sector and what they exactly mean.
Thank you for asking. I wish I had known some of this before I decided to study economics. So I think when I'd like to think about jobs in the development sector, what I generally like to do is kind of sort them into these broad categories. And of course, there are some differences between categories, but also within. But I think maybe what I can do is just kind of give a broad overview of each type of role that I know about in the development sector that might be relevant for students who are, recently graduating and entering the sector. So I think what I'll start with is think tanks. And so a lot of people have probably heard of think tanks, but my understanding is that think tanks generally use secondary or primary data to delve into very policy focused issues. And they often tend to also then specialize on certain policy kind of topics. So, for example, environmental policy, gender related policy, and so on, and carry out some kind of advocacy work that is very data based on policy topics, right? Next, we have NGOs. Again, this is probably something a lot of people are familiar with, but NGOs are more beneficiary focused, or they're more focused on designing, I would say schemes is probably not the right word, but kind of designing and delivering benefits to the true intended people, or to the people who potentially stand to gain the most from them. So NGOs, you will again find, can be very domain specific. So there'll be a particular topic, education, early childhood development, women's development, and so on, that the NGO will work on. But then it'll be very beneficiary focused, and it'll be focused on actually delivering benefits to people. Next, we have governments. So governments have a lot of development related roles. These are, governments themselves, but also, bodies that are affiliated to the governments, that kind of both act as funders. So they fund research for research as well as, delivery of policy benefits, as well as at times act as partners in development research, and also at times carry out their own research and then eventually draft policy. Next, you have development consultancies, which are more client oriented, that kind of help design and evaluate programs based on the client's need. And then you have donors or funders who are essentially looking to fund these activities. So all the activities that I described so far, donors will kind of work on funding them. And often donors are concerned with, cost benefit analysis, where funding would have the highest impact, and sort of these kind of questions. And then lastly, I think you have research labs, which is, for example, the place where I work, which are focused on carrying academic as well as policy relevant research. So over there, the idea is to build insight and build knowledge on what kind of policies work or, you know, address different questions, research questions in the development sector. So my sense is that all or at least most of these organizations have some entry level roles that might be well suited for, you know, those who are newly looking to enter the space or who are just getting out of school, undergraduate or master's school. I think, of course, you would want to think about, you know, what interests you the most when you're thinking of applying to any of these sectors. If you are thinking of entering a research sort of sector, if you're thinking of entering research labs or think tanks, so it's more academic focused. So if you foresee yourself working in academia or having a more academic oriented career, research labs or think tanks are probably a good place for you to start. If you're more interested in working on the implementation aspect of it and you want, you know, more interaction with the actual people, whether it's the government or the, you know, or the intended beneficiaries of a policy, then probably NGOs or a consulting firm are a place where you would want to start, even maybe funding agencies. If you're interested in sort of broad overviews of the sector, looking at, you know, what the latest stuff is in the space, then maybe funding agencies are where you want to think about working. So of course, each of these sectors come with their own kind of specialities or unique things that they do. And you, for somebody who's looking to enter the space, you want to try and match that as far as possible to your own interests as well. Lastly, you could also consider, you know, experimenting a little bit, working with different organizations to kind of find a good fit for you. This also helps in kind of understanding what ecosystem works best for you, where you are more likely to thrive. Or you can even, you know, transfer from one space into the other. You can spend a few years in research, pick up, you know, good solid quantitative skills and then take or data skills and take those to then work at a think tank or a consulting firm or an NGO even. Right. So a lot of these skills, I would say, are transferable. And it largely depends on your interests, your skills and, you know, your goals for yourself. And also, of course, there's no harm in experimenting a little bit and trying to, you know, experience different things before you decide on what's the good fit for you.
Wow, this has been really helpful. And as you started by saying, you know, I would have been really lucky to listen to this before I started working or, you know, when I was in my master's. I think a lot of the times we aren't aware of what a role will be like or what it is to work like in a particular type of organization unless we actually have a friend or somebody who's working there, right? Yeah, so this is really helpful. I'm actually curious to understand, in addition to people who have done masters in economics, what are the kind of educational backgrounds that you see a lot within your community of women in econ and policy?
My colleague Prashansa and I recently conducted a survey of research associates in the development space. We surveyed 156 research associates and kind of got a sense of their backgrounds and what kind of things they've studied. My sense is that while if you look at like subject domain, at least at the undergraduate level, okay, this is particular to research sector. So this is probably slightly different for NGOs, think tanks, and some of the other sectors I described before. But in the research sector, at least, economics is the most popular undergraduate major, followed to some extent by maths and stats. For masters, there's a lot more diversity. So you see people coming with master's degrees in economics, in policy, in development studies, and so on. So my sense is most people will specialize in either economics, maths, stats, or social science discipline or humanities discipline with a slightly quantitative bent, such as political science or public policy or development studies.
Okay, thank you so much. Can you tell the listeners what you think are the important skills that are required for students and early career professionals to boost their profile and to sort of increase their likelihood of getting a job in the development sector?
Sure, yes. What I can do is I can talk, again, based on the survey that I quoted earlier that my colleague Prashansa and I conducted with research associates in India. I can talk about what skills, you know, people that work as research associates in the econ policy space have. And this might be a useful place to start thinking about what skills broadly might be useful in the sector. Of course, in, these may change based on what organization type you're working in, what domain you're working in, and so on. Roughly 3/4 of our sample actually also had a master's degree. So, you know, it might be beneficial for you to do a master's degree before you enter the space, if that's something that interests you. People had also done some additional courses or, you know, familiarized themselves with statistical tools and programming. So about 75% of our respondents reported that they had some familiarity with, you know, tools like Stata or R and LaTeX. Stata seemed to be the most popular, but then R and LaTeX follow suit pretty closely. So it seems that some experience working with data and working with a software that, you know, allows you to do data analysis is beneficial to have before you enter the space. Lastly, I will add that, you know, some research experience, whether it's in the form of a short internship or a part-time research associate position with a professor, or a dissertation or term paper, or, you know, some independent research project that you carry out, it does seem useful. And I think it acts as a signal of the ability to come up with and think through a research question. Okay, actually, something that was very surprising to me is only about 9% of the respondents in our sample said that they had no prior research experience. There are a few other skills that might be useful. So, you know, responding to case study type questions, a basic understanding of different types of research methodologies, an understanding of statistics, as well as some experience with field work, and, you know, surveying or conducting sort of field-based research might be helpful. Lastly, I think if you're looking for a role that actually involves being out in the field or conducting fieldwork, regional languages and speaking the local language might also be something that, you know, is useful and works in your favor through the hiring process. I think that's what I had. Maybe Smriti would like to add.
So I think also to add to what Anahita just said, that's a, if you're in research, it sometimes so happens that, you know, you start with an area preference in your mind, like you want to work specifically in education, the advancements that are coming in the sector, but you may not really land a job in education and you may have to work in agriculture. Irrespective of whichever area you land up in, it is crucial that you know it well. So you need to be aware of the recent developments in your area. You need to be aware of what has the space looked like historically within the country and also internationally, and also the seminal literature in the field. So, for example, if you're going to get into impact evaluation, you better know the Kenya deworming study. You should know the malaria bed net study in Kenya. Let's say if you want to work in agriculture, you may very often be asked to have an opinion on the three recent farm bills that were passed. You should have an informed take on most of the things. You should know the history of Green Revolution. So these are just sectoral examples that I'm taking. But one great thing about working in this space, even if you're in research or you're in consulting or you're working with implementation agencies, is that there are interlinkages everywhere. And these interlinkages are kind of based on the skills, one, that the sectors operate on. So, for example, their ability to be analytical about issues is applicable to all sectors. I mean, that's a skill that's extremely important in research, as well as in consulting, as well as a liaison for an NGO working in the remotest corner of the country. And they're also transferable across sectors. For example, you know, I was in research earlier. I am a consultant now. I use my data skills to the best of my ability, even as a consultant. As a consultant, you can do without Stata and R. There, Excel and PowerPoint become your go-to tools. So know those well, know pivot tables well. And you need to have the ability to be able to synthesize large amount of information and to be able to convey it well to the audience, the intended audience. So also to do literature reviews and, you know, again, stakeholder management. If you are on ground working, let's say, with an NGO, then what is important is ability to be able to talk to more people, to be able to build trust. These are the skills that really are not talked about a lot in this sector, but I realize these are of importance to be able to, you know, win the trust of the department, let's say, that you're working with, the government partners, the other implementation partners. Another bit of advice that I have on this is for you to seek feedback and also mentorship. And whichever structure that you're placed in, whomever you're working with, try to seek their feedback on the work that you're doing. take charge of your work as much as you possibly can, and also seek mentorship, because these relationships, the working relationships, go a long way in life, even after, you know, you've reached your intended career goals. Because it's a learning process, and it's a great opportunity to learn from everyone, right from the beneficiary of a NREGA scheme to your PI, who has spent roughly, you know, 5-6 years of his life learning, researching on that NREGA scheme. At the end of the day, all of us are, this sector is super interconnected in terms of what it does and how it works.
Yeah, thank you so much for actually bringing out a lot of the skills that are usually not talked about. You know, everybody talks about the importance of data skills, quantitative skills, but I think you have brought up a lot of the other skills that are important that aren't usually spoken about. So thank you so much. Sort of continuing from that thread, it's kind of common knowledge now that the economy is down, and you know, there aren't many job opportunities at the moment. So for those who graduated this year, what is your advice?
Yeah, so there are a couple of tips that we always hand out to students in the job market, irrespective of what it is looking like. And I'll first start with the advice that we give out to students who are looking to find jobs in research sector. And their data skills are foremost. You need to know how to clean and work with data, to be able to visualize data. And, you know, furthermore, knowledge of econometric methods always act as advantages in your favor. You know, you may want to practice out more case studies. Let's say if you want to get into consulting, for example, case scenarios, like I see that, in fact, case scenarios are something that are applicable across research and consulting sector. For example, in research, if you're applying for a role in data collection, say, a lot of time you get asked, so how would you deal with fudged data? What would you do if you think, you know, the data that you're getting is fudged? Now, that is one case scenario that you get in a research role. And when you're in a consulting job, the question could look like, how will you convey the findings of your research or the study that, you know, you've spent months on to the policymaker? And the policymaker here could be the district magistrate or the joint secretary that you are reporting to. So to be able to reason your way out through case scenarios is a skill that's kind of appreciated across all sectors. And another bit in that is you should know how to narrow down your problems. And by your problems, I mean the problems that you've been given. So if someone says, how could we improve education sector? You really don't start taking it head on. You kind of get into the nitty gritties of it. Like even in education, what do we really want to look at? Do we want to look at literacy rates? Do we want to go for it subject wise? Which are the areas that we are going to go for? So these are the skills that always help one out across research, consulting or implementation agencies. And even when you're working on ground, let's say with beneficiaries to help them access schemes, because then you know really how to act on ground. But yeah. Having said that, the struggles in the job market are much different right now. They're different for different students. So if you happen to have an undergrad, so it gets a lot more difficult for you, because any which way, a lot of organizations only hire students with masters. They have a preference for that. So you first may want to kind of, you know, do like a research on who's really going to hire you, like if you have an undergrad. So I think just to plug that in, like we at WeConPol also have created a jobs database where we've compiled the organizations who hire students with masters specifically, or who are also open to hiring students with just an undergrad. So as I said, yes, you may want to just look at which organizations and which fields are open for you with just a bachelor's. And, you know, if you've still learned a lot of quantitative skills in your undergrad, you could secure an internship with, let's say, a professor, or you could also do a research project with your professor, and that may help you gain an edge in the sector. But if you don't think you have these skills, then it's going to be a much tougher job, like a much tougher game to get any job in the sector, which is when I think getting a master's may help you. And then the choice of getting a master's really depends on your long-term goal. Is it that you want to be in research? So if you want to be in research, then you will also look at it from the angle of getting a PhD. Or is it that you want to be in implementation or consulting? Because if the latter is your focus, then you may want to get, you know, a master's degree in like more generic courses like policy, public administration, or you may even want to get an MBA. We see a lot of people with MBAs moving to impact evaluation and implementation. And for postgraduate students, it is still easier to get shortlisted for most of the jobs. after which it comes down to in like numerous interviews that happen and the case studies that happen, the case scenarios that happen. These are called, you know, the terms used to refer to these stages are different across sectors. Like for consulting, we'll call them case studies, but for research, we will call them maybe sometimes technical interview or like, you know, field assessment. So yeah, but more or less, they kind of look like the same. But there's no denying the fact that there are actually fewer jobs in the pandemic. In fact, I know that, you know, students reach out to me saying, hey, how do we work this out? And I say, you know, cold mailing is a good option. But they say that cold mailing really hasn't worked out because a lot of people reach out to them just telling them that because of lack of funding, there has been a freeze in hiring. So that has really happened, which eventually boils down to you having to make difficult choices in terms of area, the work that you settle with. So be ready to start small here. Let's say, you know, if you were aiming to get a job in impact evaluation after your master's, you may have to start first, like, at an internship with an NGO, maybe, where you're first learning field management skills. You're learning how to interact with the beneficiaries and how to become like the interface between the beneficiaries and the district administration or so. And I personally feel that these stints really offer valuable lessons in the implementation space. And post which, I think it still gets easier for you to get into these coveted jobs. So yeah, so be ready to start small. I think a lot of us have done that. With the pandemic, it has kind of become the norm to start with smaller jobs, maybe start with your own research projects, and then make it more visible so that people can see the amount of efforts that you put in and the kind of research work that you're doing. Makes it easier for you then to get through the hiring process. And one tip that I always hand out is that please do not take this process of hiring personally. When I was hiring, I remember I used to cold mail like 50 professors and get response from one or two. A lot of times it will make you reflect on the fact that, is it my lack of skills, or is it, you know, that I don't have enough on my CV to be get shortlisted, to even get a response back. But just keep in mind, it's nothing about you. It's simply, you know, most of the times there are no projects. And at this point of time, apart from you, there are so many students who are cold mailing. So you may not get a response. You may not even get a rejection response, which is, I think, also one problem that I hold with the sector, that why don't we spend some time in acknowledging someone's application? But that also happens. So just be ready, but do not take it personally. Keep on putting in your efforts. It will take time, but it will materialize into something or the other. I mean, the sector works differently in a lot of ways. You know, sometimes it also depends on knowing the right person at the right time who can send in your application or send in your resume to the right person. So it's a mix of a whole lot of things, but you just keep on trying, just keep on reaching out to people and seeking advice and feedback. Just don't be hesitant about seeking advice and feedback. Just go and do it. This is something that I lagged at when I was in the job market, and I deeply regret it. Please feel free to reach out to people who you think can offer you good advice. That can be on LinkedIn, but also on group like ours.
Maybe I can add a couple of things here. I think one other thing that might be useful is getting access to some kind of newsletter or job database. I would recommend the Women Econ Policy job database that is on our website. But there are other sort of job newsletters or, you know, pages that regularly post job openings. Also, Twitter has become another very useful sort of platform. A lot of academics, as well as organizations post their vacancies on Twitter. So, you know, try and be on Twitter, follow people or groups that, you think would be useful for you. It, you know, you can just select what topics interest you, or then start off by following a group that then maybe is retweeting other people and job opportunities from other people that kind of can tell you who else to follow. One other thing also that I personally think is very useful is, you know, short-term opportunities like internships or part-time positions. It might be a good way to go, particularly if, you know, full-time openings are scarce. And they also kind of have that added benefit of giving you, they're not a huge time commitment. So you're typically working for, say, 3 months or at max 6 months as an intern or at a part-time role at an organization, but they also do a very good job at giving you a flavor of, you know, what a full-time role will look like. So they actually allow you to sample a little bit and see if this is actually something you think you would enjoy. which I personally think is very useful. Often they also can, you know, lead to a recommendation letter or a direct recommendation for a full-time role in the form of maybe like a pre-placement offer or, you know, just they can transition into full-time roles as well. So I would say don't be afraid to commit to an internship or a part-time role. Take that on and then see where you are 3 or 6 months down the line.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful advice. Like, in fact, every single point that both of you mentioned, I think will be very helpful to students who might be finding it difficult to find full-time job openings at this point. Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Nirupama, for having us. We hope that, you know, we had something useful to offer.
Thanks a lot, Nirupama, for inviting us. And you're doing great work with the podcast. We hope that you keep it up. And all the best to the young students on the market. It will certainly get better in some time.
Nirupama, like a couple of thoughts on the great interview. Coming to the tips, which I personally resonated with, and I thought like I should also highlight them. The first being, you know, like using this case study approach to study different things or research on different things, and how this is also going to be pretty useful for both research as a field, as a career, and also, you know, even consulting as another career choice. And, you know, the second point that I thought was, again, like quite interesting was the engagement with your seniors or peers, right? I mean, this is something that not many people will talk about. Having a good relationship with your peers can also go a long way, because, you know, end of the day, if you look back and if you are in between jobs, you can always go back to them and fall back on some of the suggestions that they give us. And also, you know, they may be more connected than the person or like us in the first place, and they can always use that contact to build more connections. And the third point was about like transferable skills, which again, like I think was a wonderful point to note.
Yeah, I know, right? So I thought a lot of the things that are kind of very important, but we somehow didn't get a chance to discuss on this podcast came out just in this episode. So I'm really glad that we got to have this conversation with them.
Completely agree with you, Nirupama. Thank you for actually identifying them. And, you know, thanks to Smriti and Anahita also for agreeing to do this.
Just repeating this, if you are somebody who works in the development sector or in development economics and you identify as woman, then you should definitely sign up and become a part of Women in Econ Policy. They're a wonderful group, which is really helpful. They share a lot of resources and they conduct so many sessions that are helpful for everyone. And in fact, they have rolled out the Young Women in Economics program that we mentioned in the previous episode. Now they're accepting applications for that program. So do check it out and share it with the people who you think it might help.
As always, we are here with a disclaimer. The thoughts and ideas that we share in this podcast are our own, Nirupama's and mine, and we do not represent the institution or organization that we work for.
For more such resourceful episodes on social sciences and humanities, click follow on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or whichever platform you're listening to this podcast on. Reach out to us if you have any queries. You can find our LinkedIn profiles in our blogs. And if you like what you heard, share it on social media and spread the word. Thank you so much for tuning in today.